Hello, film fans. Welcome to the Film vs. Film podcast. My name is Martin Harries, your host, and I'm joined by the film encyclopedia man, Boaz Dix. We are a couple of filmmakers on occasion, but mainly can't stop yapping about movies. On this podcast, every episode we pick a topic from a film that's coming out at the cinema or on VOD. Myself and Boaz pick our favourite film from that topic, or team up against a guest and battle it out to decide which film will become the greatest film of all time. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe. Please enjoy part 2. So, our pick then, Boaz. Matt went for Skyfall. I would probably pick Skyfall if we ever go first on the picks. But again, as I said, like, American Beauty was... I wasn't sure I really wanted to watch that one again. So I think really the only other option was this one, 1917. You know, I think we're both into our war history. Well, certainly Boaz is a lot. My God, you are.
Oh, you are. You are as well.
And also, we have a kind of an interesting connection with this film, as a lot of this film was shot in Salisbury Plain, that last sequence where he's running along the chalk trench. That's in Salisbury Plain, literally 10 minutes away from where I live. So,
oh, wow.
I was staying with a friend at the time in Salisbury. It was everywhere looking for casting, you know, for extras. There was posters, there was stuff in the paper, there was just, it was all over the place. Yeah, so I remember that.
Do people in your neck of the woods go and now try to copy that run? Kind of like what we have in the States where people try to do the Rocky run up the stairs in Philadelphia.
No, because you'll probably get shot because it's a, it's a squaddy training area. It's the army, the army trains a lot around here, so... So if there's red flags like along the road, you can't really go in the fields.
Don't get shot.
You could do a very accurate version of that scene, dodging bullets and real missiles and man, I should have gone for the extras call out. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. All my friends, we're gonna do it. Let's do it. We didn't end up doing it. Man, I do regret that.
Apparently they were like really brutal with like the extras as well. If you got anything wrong, like with your direction, you were gone. They just got someone else. So
that's crazy.
Oh, wow.
Which I kind of get a little bit, you know, a lot of money. And the setups obviously took a ridiculous amount of time as they're perceiving this film to be all one shot. So, so what happens in 1917, Boaz?
Blake and Schofield are two privates on the front lines in World War One in 1917, as the, you know, title suggests. They are basically on the cusp of a really major offensive. They're called to the commander's tent or dugout, and he basically gives them an incredibly important mission that they have to go past no man's land, which has the German side of the trench has actually been abandoned by the Germans, and they've fallen back to a new defensive line and are actually hoping that the Allies attack it because it'll be a slaughter. It's, you know, it's a trap. And they can't seem to get a hold of one commander's battalion. And he's just gung-ho. He's going to chase the Germans, but he's going to, you know, walk into a massacre. So one of them, Blake, his brother is in the other unit. So it's very personal to him. And they've got to do it now. Two of them alone through no man's land, through various obstacles and threats and all kinds of stuff to get to that battalion and to give the letter to call off the attack before 1,600 Brits end up dying.
We should mention as well, this is all kind of based on real stories. Of course, we know it's based on a real event, but this is based on real stories that actually happened from letters that they've closely looked at to create a lot of these characters.
Well,
so Matt, your initial reactions to this one?
Yeah, I thought this was this is just a really beautiful piece of work, but it is a harrowing experience. One thing I wanted to point out right away is that I normally hate the single take gimmick. because it feels like a gimmick that is always calling attention to itself. A movie like Birdman was a movie a lot of people enjoyed. I could not personally enjoy it because that movie, to me, the visuals always were calling attention to themselves. And maybe that was part of the point of that movie. But here, this is a movie about the boys on the ground. I don't want to be distracted by the technical element. I want to feel the emotion. I want to be with these guys. And I'm happy to say, again, I'm going to heap praise on Roger Deakins and on Sam Mendes. They managed to pull off the magic trick, which is they're doing the amazing technical wizardry of making it look like it is one single take, but they're never losing sight of the story or the characters or the feeling. I barely notice. I think with those other movies, you know, like a Birdman, or there was another big one that was like one solid take that is escaping my mind right now. But I think with those movies, right, you're constantly just bludgeoned over the head by the style. And here I forgot about it. I was so entrenched with these guys and so immersed in the height of the moment of the real tension, the real stakes that were on the line. And they do a great job of also utilizing that technical gimmick. I hate to call it a gimmick now in this case because it is so well done, that tool to sort of keep introducing new elements to a scene, whether it is like a new landscape or whether it is a new obstacle they have to encounter, a surprise, or even just sort of this weird moment of beauty. There are real beautiful moments in this movie. There are horrifying moments in this movie. It's fantastic. One of the best war films I've ever seen. And I just love the choices. Like, I love the choice to cast two guys who are basically relatively unknown. One guy I know is from Game of Thrones. And the other guy, I think I only saw recently in The Kingsman. They're just two guys. And you, for me, that works because it helps me identify even more with them. I'm not looking at actors. They blew me away. This movie blew me away. And it is truly, it sounds obvious, but it is true. It is a harrowing ordeal. You are with these guys for 2 hours, and it feels like you spend an entire day with them. It's hard, but it's a great movie and definitely worth your time if you've never seen it. But I have to think everybody's seen this, right?
Yeah, you would think so. I agree with a lot of what you're saying, Matt. I love the screenplay of this. I love the acting. The directing at times does bother me. I agree with the fact that I like the whole real-time aspect of it. I think that's a really great move. I just feel like they're limiting themselves a little bit. Not totally, but limiting themselves on what they can do in telling this story, making it all one shot. And sometimes I'm like, I can see the joins here. It becomes a little distracting, that. But overall, this is a pretty remarkable film. But I just wish they wouldn't limit themselves so much. I think a director, an obvious director, Spielberg, who does a lot of like one takes, a lot of really like long oneers, if you want to call it that, in his films, but he knows how to put them in the right place, and he knows what scenes he needs to, you know, chop scenes up in, you know, to make that particular scene work, if you know what I mean. Whereas this, I feel like sometimes I'm like, I just want a wide shot here, people. See what's going on. A lot of this I liked, but just some bits I'm like, come on, people. Let's pull the camera back and let's go a little bit more traditional. Boaz, how about you? Initial reactions?
Yeah, no, initial reactions. You know, I've been wanting to see this for quite some time and I've been putting it off. And I'm glad I've seen it. And I did, you know, I genuinely did enjoy it. I think the way everything looks, when you're talking about, like, you know, the color palette, and you're talking about, you know, the costumes and the landscapes and just everything, and just how, you know, well the acting is, and even the direction for the extras and stuff feeling like real characters. I mean, it's all tremendous. And there are some scenes that I absolutely love, like how they're done, how they're stylized. I also have to commend the background music as well. I think that's great. And it does, you know, I've just got to say it now that I've noticed it previously. I've got to mention this every other time. But, you know, yeah, the music's great. I like a lot of this movie, but I think I will have to sort of agree. It's like, it's not so egregious in like the night scenes, but there definitely are times in the day where you're like, yeah, I can see that you've made a false cut here. So it's either like go big or go home, like do the whole damn thing so I don't see the seams, or maybe just allow cuts and change camera angles, because then, you know, I just wouldn't, it wouldn't be noticeable. I wouldn't care. So that was slightly distracting. So I don't think it's 100% seamless. I mean, if either it was 100% seamless or they just did the long takes for several scenes in this movie, which I think are tremendous as long takes. I would say one of my favorite ones is when he's finally made it onto the shore and the camera follows it. It's like he's breaking down, and then he just kind of sits down. He's like defeated. And then you hear singing, and it's like almost angelic. And he like moves his way through the forest, and then the camera overtakes him, and it goes, you know, to this choir, you know, going around all the men and back to him again. You know, phenomenal. There's some really great uses of camera work like that. And also one really great transition I quite liked, which I didn't know it was going to be a transition, and that took me by surprise, but where the camera goes out of the window to survey the, you know, the completely bombed out city that he's in. And, you know, and he's looking, first he looks over it because he's clambered up the stairs. He's looking at the guy that he shot and that just shot him down the stairs. And he looks over, and then the camera just goes out the window over this bombed out husk of a city. And then it goes down, and then he's there. And then I was like, whoa. So, you know, that's a transition for like later, like much later, you know, in the hours. I love that. I thought that was great. So there are many scenes I like. But yeah, I will say, yeah, it's just the parts where they've done the false cut and you can tell. that happens maybe about 5 times that I could tell. And it really is quite distracting, you know.
Directing then, you know, I do have some issues with the one shot narrative of this film. And because the music at times has to do a lot of the heavy lifting in the storytelling, that load is too heavy at times. When Blake and Schofield are approaching the German front line and the music builds and builds, and when the characters discover the trench is empty, the music stops dramatically to give you this surprise feeling, but it's not dramatic at all because you can't see their faces because the camera's too far away, and you can't see the trench properly to see that it's empty. So the music beat kind of falls a bit flat a little bit.
I think I sort of get it. I wouldn't really criticize that. I had no problem with that.
That was certainly the one moment I thought, you need a wide shot here. You need some cutting here. This just doesn't work as a one-shot sequence. A lot of the stuff building up to that as they're going around this massive crater when you see the silhouette of the reflection of them walking around the crater with the water, you know, that was great. But yeah, that was just the one scene where I was just like, I'm not sure this is working.
But you know what I love visually, and it's definitely a directorial flourish here to differentiate sort of each vibe or each new location because you're doing the single take thing, is it almost like a video game. There's a moment where it sort of shows you, this is now the color palette. This is now the lighting palette. So like, here's what No Man's Land looks like. And then the transition from us crossing No Man's Land to going down into that bunker where it almost goes like first person and you're coming down with him through the steps and the flashlight. And you're like, oh, now we're going to do a whole flashlight bit. That's how this is going to look. And the mood and the tone, everything, scope changes. Now it's super close, right? No Man's Land was really wide and big and sweeping. And now you have this tight claustrophobic space. I really like those bits because it helps establish the tone of the upcoming sequence right off the bat. It's just like, all right, here's your deck of cards. This is what it looks like. And now it'll play like this for a bit.
One that I really liked about that, because it kind of reminded me of like a theater production where they're at the farm with the hut and, you know, the milk, and he's found the milk.
Oh yeah.
And you have that, the barn. That's basically what it is, a barn. And so they're hanging around the barn, and then you see the, you know, dog fight. So they're in the barn looking out, seeing the dogfight past the doors, and then the plane like smashes through the barn. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's got to, like, you know, so that, and they pull the German out who's screaming on fire, pull him out to safety just in front of the barn. And then, you know, he has a shootout with the German and the guy dies in his arms while the barn is like burning behind him. And that was quite cool. That was like, you know, if you're talking about like a different feel for a section, like that felt very theater-like, or do you know what I mean? Just this one great set piece where everything was happening around it.
Yeah, I really like that the plane crash scene, because it kind of it is messing with your expectations a little bit, and the suspense and the rhythm of what you're expecting to happen. Like, I love that bit when the plane kind of dips under the ridge, and like, you're like, is it crashed, or is it going to come up? And then, oh shit, it's come up and it's crashing through.
Yeah.
Right. You're waiting for that little plume of smoke to come up, and then instead you get a plane.
Yeah. Because even before that, you're not even expecting, they're not expecting it to crash near where they are at all. They're just looking at this spectacle. But I love how the sequence where Blake dies as well, because again, it messes with your expectation, because Blake is a great, honorable guy. He wants Schofield to get water for him. Schofield goes, gets the water. And then you hear a gasp of him being stabbed. And then almost immediately you get the camera turned to see him falling backwards, bleeding. And you don't see the death at all. So you would think you would actually see that on camera, but you don't at all, which is really, really interesting.
It makes it so effective too, because your cue for that is Blake shouting, "No, stop, stop." And it's so real, and you know something's wrong. And then by the time the camera whip pans back to him, he's just bleeding out from his guts. And it's such a gut punch. It's so sad, that moment. Yeah. And isn't there a moment where he kind of like, he loses track of reality for a second, because he comes back in and he's like, where am I? Am I dying? What is this?
Yeah. He was like, you know, what happened to me? And he's like, you've been stabbed. He's like, am I dying? And he's like, yeah, I think you are. And he just cannot remember what the hell he's been talking about.
Oh, it's such a good performance by that kid.
And I feel like they got that from like a letter. They must have got that from some sort of actual real war document of how someone actually died, you know? So, because I've never really seen that kind of thing in a death scene before in a movie, really. Not one I can think of right now. So
yeah, and it feels real, right? Yeah,
that death scene definitely stuck with me. That felt really real. I would have actually preferred to kind of stay on it for a lot longer than they did.
I feel it's pretty long as well.
It was pretty long, but I would have stayed on it for a little while, just kind of, you know, let him sort of, because it didn't really seem like it had even registered to him, because it wouldn't, you know, something that horrible. So I guess maybe it would be something I would want to just like chill out for like a half an hour to sort of fucking process this as a person, if so, you know, a best friend died in my arms. And he doesn't really get the chance, because immediately, you know, a bunch of British squaddies just appear. Yeah, I would have maybe even spaced out like when they came, because they came like just as he died. Like, that was, it's just like, what are the chances?
They almost crashed the scene the same way that plane does.
Yeah, right. I do. I feel like I just would have spaced out him meeting them. Like, it just seems like such a coincidence.
I don't mind it so much, because I just feel like it's just this thing in war that you just don't have time to grieve. You just got to carry on and continue with the mission.
Yeah, no, my gripe just with the scene is it just felt a little too convenient. Oh, and one thing I would like to say is, again, you know, talking about the music, I noticed that you don't even know when he dies, because he looks completely out of it. And he's, you know, he's breathing very little. It's going out. His air is going out. You know, he's holding him. And then you can tell the exact moment he dies. And I think it's a very clever moment of doing it, where they just cut out the background music. And it's such subtle background music that you barely notice it. And then they just cut it out on the moment that they're like, he's dead.
An excellent dead guy acting by that kid. I was thinking like how hard that's got to be, especially with, again, the whole one take Magilla that's hanging over everything.
And he's got to rummage through his corpse for like, you know, the relevant stuff.
Yeah. Rummage through corpse, be dragged, don't flinch, don't blink, don't breathe. It's like there's no cutaway, so there's no safety net for you. You have to just be dead.
I think I know how they did it. They actually killed him. He's never showing up in anything again.
If you see him in something now, he's an AI.
Just CGI, computer generated.
Who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
What?
Well, they've got a twin brother.
You're a bit see-through. What? Yeah, I'm dead.
Yeah.
Yes, the film is in all in one shot.
I wouldn't even say it's really in one shot, because even in continuity, you know, obviously there are false cuts. But when I kept hearing it's all in one shot, I mean, he gets shot. That shocked me. I did not see that coming. Where he thought he shot the guy in the tower, and he goes up to check.
Yeah.
You know, because he's shot repeatedly.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes up. And the dude is like, you know, hunched over, you know, because obviously he must have got him.
Yeah.
And he just opens the door and he blows him back. They blow each other back immediately, just like shot in the head. And he goes hurtling down the stairs.
Yeah. Snap to black. I love that. That hard screen, yeah.
Yeah, so I would, like, traditionally cut. Yeah. So if you're actually talking about how they should advertise it, it's really two shots because, you know, he does black out. Yeah. You know.
But, yeah, most of it is all in one shot. But they still bring a lot of variation of pace. I love the German tunnel scene where all of a sudden they find a tripwire and a rat sets off the bomb. Blake has to dig up Schofield from under a load of rubble. Then the tunnel is collapsing. Then they have to scramble to find a way out. So Schofield says he can't see. Then they come across a mine shaft seconds after he says he's blind. They jump over the gap. And it's a brilliant, like, hold your breath moment for Schofield's character. And all that happens, which feels like a matter of seconds. So I just love the intensity of that film, of that scene. Like, it's fairly kind of slow paced.
Yeah.
You know, this is all real time, you know. So I just love the fast pace in that particular moment, you know.
And I do agree, just ranking up the tension and ranking up the obstacles there.
That's a great screenplay moment. It's just I love that line when you get that moment of levity before that tunnel collapse happens. He goes, Jesus, even their rats are bigger than ours. Another Sam Mendes rat moment.
Yeah.
Sam Mendes must be like a rat fan. He's got to be. He owns a rat or something.
Yeah, I know. I think there must be like some, you know, like the Cornetto trilogy. Is there like a rat trilogy of Sam Mendes film?
Yes. There's got to be a rat trilogy, totally. There's going to be rats in Empire of Light. That's what Olivia Colman's going to be railing against.
Yeah, I think so.
The rats in the theater.
They'll link them all together. And it's the same family of rats.
It's the signature now.
It's just the same one in the background. They connect, you know.
Yeah.
It would be amazing if you put one mark on, like, one rat, and it's the same rat. And, like, Bond and that. That would be amazing.
That's great.
As I said before, like, you know, I feel like they just needed some cuts in moments. I mean, like, and I wanted a wide angle so I could just see what's going on a bit more, just to establish geography a bit. And at times it's quite obvious where the hidden cuts are, pretty much every time for me. You know, when the camera moves away from the characters just to landscape, there's a cut there. Or just before they go into the tunnel, there's a second of black. The camera tracks really close to the ground, like really close on dirt. There's one there, or something just flashes past the camera. They're all cut. So it became a little distracting, and throughout it's a bit annoying.
I didn't mind the ones where it is, you know, going through a tunnel or going through dark or going through water.
Yeah. There's one really awkward one where he jumps into water and it's just like a CG dummy. That tracks for a moment. That's the only one I actively disliked.
I think there are only two that I actively didn't really like very much. So one was where they're next to the orchard. The camera goes behind the wall. So, you know, so they're obscured by the wall and background.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, man, you're not exactly in the same position. Like, it just seems weird. Like, I could just tell. It's like, you're a couple of centimeters off. It's just, it struck me really bad. The other one was with the van where they're trying to push it up, which I thought was a great scene. But then it does this, it goes round the seat guy, and then it comes round, and I'm like, man, your turban, it just doesn't look right. It looks completely different. I was like, I could just tell something's happened.
I feel like every time there's just landscape and no characters in there, there's probably some digital stuff going on.
Yeah.
To start off the shot again, you know.
Yeah, so it's just little bits like that. I don't know really how to fix it. Those bits bothered me a bit.
We're criticizing this film a lot. It's a great film, but
it is amazing. So I will say it looks beautiful. It looks great. Yeah. And it's wide, and sometimes it's claustrophobic. And the action set pieces, just when stuff is going off, it's amazing.
I do feel like sometimes when they get to an end of a sequence, they're like, okay, we need to find a way. We need to find a camera angle, a camera tracking shot to movement.
We've got to swell around something so that it obscures them.
To start you know, the next sequence so we can build another set somewhere else, you know. So it's a bit yeah. slightly irritating that they kind of direct themselves into a corner a little bit, but I think these are mild gripes.
Yeah, I think those, yeah.
Totally, yeah. Totally, because the rest of it is an embarrassment of riches, especially visually. Like, I also love the way, and I saw a lot of this, you know, I was reminded watching rewatching Skyfall with Mendez and Deakins, is the way they play with light. Mm. Right. Oh, yeah. Light is a huge weapon in this movie. And I love my favorite visual sequence, and I think it is a beautiful piece of film, is when he is in the ruined city, when he is on his way to hiding out and meeting the woman. It's all lit by flares at night, and you have the light traveling through these ruins, and the shadows dance along the floor as he's running. It is gorgeous.
Yeah, it just looks gorgeous. And like, you know, he's trying to keep down, or he's trying to rush to the next bit, and the shadows just going through him, over him, just everywhere. It looks incredible.
Yeah. It looks fantastic, yeah. And it's great, too, because it also is used as a way to hide those little surprise points. Like, when that German guy appears, like, he's so distracted looking at the sky, we, the audience, can see that guy is running full speed at him. Like, he's gonna shoot him. So it's shocking when it goes off.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. And he's firing off shots, and, like, you know, you've got puffs of smoke just hitting the ground, hitting the wall. Yeah. And one thing I really liked about that scene is this one shot where he grabs this guy, and he's, like, got him by, you know, the mouth. It's like, you know, this young German guy, he must be, like, he looks quite young. And he lets the hand off of his mouth, and he goes, "Engländer," like he's shouting, like, it's an Englishman. And then immediately he's like, tackles him to the ground and is like trying to choke him the fuck out. Like, this guy's got to die. And the guy's pulled his knife and he's trying to, and they're struggling. And so you've got this going on in like the left-hand corner. And in the top right, a German superior, you know, comes over and he's just wandering around in the background, probably looking for this guy. And he's just looking around. And you've just got in the bottom left corner, like, he's trying desperately to kill this man as quickly.
It looks like that guy's drunkenly trying to pee in the corner. That's what I thought he was doing. Like, he's stumbling.
That was amazing. And then it almost gave me a heart attack because the guy is nearly dead. And you're just like, please don't look around. And he finally kills him. And then the guy looks straight at him, like straight through. So, like, at us, at him. And he says the dead German guy's name. I can't remember what his name is. Probably Franz or something. And so he's like, you know, calling to his buddy, and he just like turns around and he pelts at the guy before he like can draw his pistol and just punches him and runs like hell. Yeah. Like, that whole scene was tense as fuck. Yeah. Really well done.
And we're talking a lot about the visuals, but like, those visuals and that scene that you're talking about also only work because the blocking is so good.
Oh, yeah.
The staging of where the actors is in a scene, and they have to be super conscious of it. Again, especially with the single take thing, it's like, that is genius placement to figure out how to get physical bodies into a frame, keep them, you know, at bay until they're supposed to be introduced into your field of vision. Like, that's a lot of work, and it's like a ballet, right? It's got to be choreographed and timed, and people have to enter a scene at the correct time. Like, that is also, that seems like an added layer of like, now we got to keep track of this dance that these actors have to do now, right? Yes. You don't have the cuts to hide behind. It's like, kind of dazzling now that like I keep thinking about it. Just a simple scene like that, the guy in the background and the choking in the foreground, that's nuts.
It's definitely my favorite scene, I would say. And I think going into this, into a World War One film, you're like, how are they going to make rubble, rain, grass, mud, and more mud and mud lots of mud really interesting? And Roger Deakins and Sam Mendes does in this scene, like, it's so well choreographed with the camera. Like, it's as if sometimes, like, there is no walls that's in the way of the camera. It's so well choreographed, especially that running scene at the end. And it's very reminiscent of that Shanghai scene in Skyfall, in that fight where there's a little bit of disorientation going on with all the shadows and flares between the two characters when, you know, the German comes out of into the light from that fire. You're like, are they seeing each other, you know? And then yes, they do, you know, with the firing. So there's a little similarity there, and it's all done with lighting. It's all done with lighting, and it's just brilliantly done, for sure. Definitely my favorite scene of the film. The only other thing I would say about directing that last moment, when that run from Schofield, is pretty remarkable, how no one gets hurt from the explosions, which seems to happen very close to the camera is incredible. There must be like a risk clause in the extras contract.
Yeah. And as he's running into extras, like,
yeah,
is that planned? Or is he just like, if they're like, look, if you run into somebody, like, there's a chance this actor might nail you.
You keep going. Just keep going. Yeah.
Just keep going. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I heard somewhere, I can't remember who it was by, so I have to check it, that that was an accident. He wasn't meant to run into people. Like, he had to keep up with the camera. And he just, he ran into someone and he was just like, oh shit. So he's got to keep up with the camera and then he hits another person.
The extra was probably fired, to be fair.
But I think the fact that he doesn't break character is like, fuck this. This mission is important. Like, for him, I suppose, get the shot, but also for his character, like, come hell or high water, I've gone through so much shit, too much shit, to stop now.
It's really interesting, because I don't know if you guys have watched Gallipoli, Peter Weir's film, World War One film.
I've heard of it, I've never seen it.
It's so good.
Is that the one with...
Mel Gibson, yeah.
Mel Gibson, yeah, I have watched that.
And there's a very similar scene at the end where Mel Gibson has to deliver a message to the British officers to stop the attack. But it's cut very differently. It's very, very fast cutting. You've got the runner, his friend, running along the, you know, the battlefield. You got Mel Gibson running to the officers. You got shots of the officers. So it's all very fastly cut. So... I don't know whether, like, that film was very much in their mind. I don't know when they decided to do this all in one shot. Yeah. But I still feel like you get the same impact from that film of this really tense atmosphere with that one shot run. It's just this one angle of him running across all these people. So, yes, it's more like spectacle, I guess, but it's still a really strong feeling you get from it.
Another scene that I quite like is where, at the beginning, they're like really trying to get on with this because, you know, his brother is in danger. So they're talking about this. He's like, no, I've got to go. And they're bumping into people and they're getting tense and stuff. And because it's all very claustrophobic, the trenches, like they're really kind of tight. It's really only one way, these places, and they're bumping into places. And you're like, man, this is hell. This is hell. And then they get to this other trench and they're like, you know, are you the, they're looking for the dunes, or I can't remember who they're looking for. They're looking for a particular trench commander. And they get to this trench and it is fucked. And, you know, it's collapsed in on itself because of shells and stuff. They're digging out soil and, you know, filth and all that stuff. And their commander is just dead. And it's so narrow and they have to walk on him. And he's like, hey, you know, don't walk on him, you know. Yeah, and they look really worse for wear. So it's just like the fact that where they come from, where it starts the film, you're like, man, living in the trenches is hell. And as they go through the trench, like, it gets a lot worse.
I kind of like as well in this one-shot aspect of the film that they don't really point out, like, the dead bodies. They're just there, you know. The camera just goes past them. They're never focusing on them.
Yeah, especially when they go through no man's land. And you just have, you know, just corpses on the floor or in holes or just when he gets cut on the wire, you know, where he was holding the wire and he gets like, he gets cut and he's...
That was disgusting.
That was gross. Like, and he slit his hand.
And his hand goes right into that corpse.
Yeah, it's straight into that body.
That's the thing I remember from 1917. Like, I had seen it once before this show. You know, of course I remember the guy running, but the thing that I always remember is him coming over that ridge, putting his hand down into a dead guy and being like, that guy is going to die now because he has bacteria or whatever.
It's like the guy's stomach was made out of porridge. It just went like straight through.
Yes.
That was horrible.
And I also love too that, speaking of the dead bodies, and you're saying how they're introduced in a scene after he's in the riverbed and it rains flowers and you have this beautiful moment, kind of calls back to what Blake was talking about, right? He talks about working in the botanicals and how they rain down, looks like snow. Yeah. And then there are all the bodies, just like buoys that he's got to climb on top of to get out.
Yeah.
It's so disturbing. It's great dead bodies in this movie.
Great dead body acting.
If you like dead bodies, great dead bodies in this movie.
So favorite shots, people?
My favorite shot is in that ruined city.
Yeah.
Before he meets the French lady in the bunker, when he's running and the flares are dancing through the night sky and all those shadows are moving, that is some of the most beautiful work I think I've ever seen. Mm. I don't want to be too hyperbolic about it, but it's film art. It looks incredible. Mm. It's such a striking image.
That's my favorite bit. Yeah. It's my favorite bit in the movie, and it's my favorite shot.
Especially like the reflection in the puddle of water of the flare as well. Yeah, it's just like, oh, it's so beautiful.
Yeah. Gorgeous.
Boaz, same scene or different?
I would say same roundabout scene. I think there's many places I could pick from. I would say when the camera goes from out of the window, him looking down on the destruction of the city, out of the window, tracks through the city, and then comes down next to him. That was really good.
Oh, right.
That was just a great transition. And probably what would be very close to that is him trying to choke out the German soldier.
Intense. Directing score, Matt, what are you going for 1917?
I mean, I think it's a feat. The only thing that holds it back for me, like I said a bit, is, you know, the commitment to the real-time aspect, but it is still gorgeous and there are some really beautiful moments. I'm going to go 8.1. Ooh, 8.1. Okay. It's not as slick and luscious as Skyfall is, and I miss the pacing, but I have to give credit where credit is due, just simply for the amount of work that went into building these moments in a film like this. I'm going to go 8.1.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. What do you reckon? I would probably go a little bit higher, just how gorgeous it looks as well. So
in my head, as you were talking about the film, like if they managed to make the cuts like less obvious, then I think I would get closer to maybe a 9. I would get closer to a 9. That said, going through the criticisms and stuff like that, I'm happy like maybe an 8.5 or an 8.6.
Let's go 8.5, shall we?
Yeah.
It feels dirty, like putting an 8.5 to a Roger Deakins shot film. It's just like, this is still sacrilege. But
it's still really good. I mean, that's still, it's still over. We can go a little higher if you want.
Yeah. 8 is nothing to shake a stick at. If you have 8 of something, that's a good amount.
We can go a little higher if you want. If you want to do like 8.7.
No, I'm good. I'm not doing a U and changing my mind last minute. So.
All right, fair. Mr. Decisive.
Right. Screenplay then. Also, just an aspect of like Blake's death we haven't really touched on is that we've said it's really brilliantly done, but he dies halfway through the film. You know, for an effectively it being a two-character film, this is really quite bold. And for it to be like so early on is just pretty amazing. You would expect a death like that at the beginning of like the third act, but it's just another example of anything can happen in war, you know, and the death scene especially is brilliantly drawn out, as we said a lot, but Schofield doesn't want to accept that Blake is going to die as well, because he's trying to keep him up on his feet. Mm. He's like, no, you're not going to die on me here. Mm. You're still going to come with me. You're the map dude. I don't know where I'm going. But no, it's more obviously heartfelt than that. It's just quite amazing that he dies within 50 minutes of the film, in a 2-hour film. It's just so unexpected.
Yeah. And after doing something so heroic too, right?
Especially, actually he's very much like the hero, one of the two. And he's taken the call to adventure. It's his brother. He's going to do it. It's the right thing. He's leading, you know, Schofield. He's leading him through all of the obstacles. You know, he's the main guy. And he's very hopeful and all this. And even when it comes to how he dies, you know, the downed plane pilot, he's trying to do the right thing. Like, Schofield was like, we should just put him out of his misery. So he's thinking, we should just shoot this fucker. But, you know, Blake is like, no, you just get water. Like, we'll try and, you know, make sure he gets better or whatever. We'll sort this out. And for his heroic act, he gets killed. You know, it's like, it's just so unfair.
No good deed goes unpunished.
It's just really, really unfair. But, you know, that's just what it is.
I also love that for screenplay, there are moments of real levity in this I love too. Like, it's not all harrowing. I mean, the majority of it is. But one of my favorite bits is when they run into, I only know him as Moriarty from Sherlock.
Oh, yeah.
When he's like, settle a bet. What day is it? And it's like, oh, it's Friday. He's like, this fucking idiot thought it was Tuesday. I love that moment so much. Yeah. Just a great line.
Yeah. Andrew Scott is brilliant. Yeah.
Andrew Scott, yes. Great guy. Great actor.
Oh, and then when he was saying like he gave him the flare, like one of the guys gave him a flare gun, and he was like, you know,
I don't like losing these to the Hun. So when they start shooting at you, could you be so kind as to throw it back?
That's the one. Yeah.
Throw it back, please.
That was quite funny. That was really funny.
And I just like, when he does fire it, he just chucks it on the floor. Like, yeah. Yeah. Like, well, I ain't got that big of an arm.
It's like, yeah. Oh, fuck it.
I'm not Tom Brady.
Yeah, yeah, that was really funny.
There's also a bit, too, where they're like, they have a boy moment, Schofield and Blake, where he's like, you'll be wanking in no time. He's like, wrong hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny. I like that. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I love that. That, to me, is the stuff that's like, that's the good trench camaraderie of war movies, is when boys will be boys a little bit, and you kind of have those moments as if they're not in this impossible situation. Yeah. Like, I really like those moments.
Yeah, because we forget these soldiers were mainly kids, you know. These are like 18 to 22 or whatever.
Yeah, really young.
They are not old, hardened soldiers at all. Mm. They're just thrown into this. Yeah. So as you said, I do like the quite funny banter between these characters.
Yeah.
For a fairly simple story as well, with just two characters getting to point A to point B, delivering a message, this film manages to ramp up the stakes quite a few times. Like, obviously one of them dies very early on, but a few lines from Mark Strong's character changes everything when he says to Schofield at the bridge, if you do manage to get to Colonel McKenzie, make sure there are witnesses.
Oh, yeah.
And then he says, they're direct orders, sir. I know, but some men just want the fight. So it heavily implies that just getting there is half the battle here. When before you thought it's just a survival film to get to point A to point B. But now in a few lines, it just becomes more complicated. You mentioned it briefly, Matt, as well, but I really like the sequence in the river where Schofield almost drowns of exhaustion, a little great acting moment from George Mackay. But then he sees tree blossoms fall in the water, and you immediately think back to his friend Blake, who just died.
Yes. I love that callback.
Because he spoke in great detail about his family having an orchard.
And it's poetic, you know? We talked about the poetry in Skyfall. You know, that almost felt like almost a poetic moment here, where those moments sort of rhymed. It was a callback, and it felt like you got this moment of beauty in an ugly world. And then, of course, the reality of war sets in, and the rug gets pulled out from under you, and here are a bunch of dead bodies you got to climb over.
Yeah, like, but it's that transition of, like, having a beautiful moment to then this quite horrifying moment, probably the most one of the most beautiful moments to the most horrifying moments of just climbing over dead bodies to get away.
Yeah.
And George Mackay does an amazing acting job of just looking shit scared as well, you know.
In performance, but also in screenplay, the way that this movie sort of economically tells you something about a character, it speaks volumes, but they do it quickly. Like that moment, even before Schofield pulls the you know, his personal artifacts out, and you see, like, presumably, I guess, what is his wife and daughter with the message that says, come back to us. Like, when he's with the French lady, you can tell for the first time he feels normal. Yeah. Like, he feels at home. And you get it right away. You're like, oh, this is what this guy has back where he's from. He has this setup, wife, little baby, or young child. And now all of a sudden, you see it because he's been hardened the whole time. I give my medal away for a drink of wine. I don't give a shit. Like, he's like a hardened soldier. But in that moment, he's giving away all his supplies. He gives away all his stuff. You knew the milk was going to come back when that baby popped out. Like, all of a sudden, it told me everything about that guy. I was like, he's a young father. That's what this guy's deal is. And I love the economy of that. It doesn't need to be said. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need to outwardly say, like, I'm trying to get back to my wife and child. Like, he doesn't ever say that. He doesn't need to. That's the best writing, right? It's like writing that doesn't reveal itself, doesn't feel like writing.
Yeah. It's a beautiful character moment when he starts singing to the baby as well.
Yes.
Really quite beautiful and quite a nice moment in that very intense scene of just things just slowing down a bit so he can breathe a bit in the story.
It's also, you know, before that, it's kind of horrible because, you know, when he's trying to talk to her and he's like, you know, is this your baby? And she's like, no, like, no, this isn't mine.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you know whose baby it is? It's like, no. So you're like, wow, that is fucking horrible. That is really, really terrible. But then, you know, then it goes to something more sweet and heartfelt. Yeah. Just that, that dichotomy of going from something so horrendous, you know, this child is an orphan, to he's giving everything to this kid, and he's playing with this kid, and he's trying to sing it a lullaby and stuff.
And it happens quite a few times, just this beautiful moment to a horrific one. And a lot of the time, especially that river one for me, it creeps up on you, you know, you don't expect it. You're like, oh, shit.
Right. It's almost like Sam Mendes is like, don't get comfortable. Yeah. don't. I'm going to lull you into a moment, but don't get comfortable because we've still got to go.
So we've already talked about that moment, but you know, it's less horrific and just more like, you know, heart beating like they're going to die. But in the cave-in thing, and you really thought he was going to die. Like he gets blasted like across the fucking room when that thing goes up, and then buried. But just before that, they're making jokes. They're joking about the rats and stuff, and I had no idea. He's like, "There's a tripwire." And then the rat carries, like, the apples. And I thought this was a joke. Like, okay, yeah, keep them away from that because, you know, it's a rat with apples. But, you know, then they almost die. It's, like, it's deadly serious. It's, like, they went from pissing about to, like, they were almost murdered.
The horrors of war, right? It's always the weird, stupid thing that happens.
Yeah.
The guy doesn't realize he's standing on a landmine. Yeah. You know, it's, like, it's always the weird, shocking thing, you know?
Favorite lines, people? Mine is the bet one about the days.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I do love the bit. I'm going to go for the other one. I do love that. And he says, you'll be wanking in good. No time. Yeah. And he says, wrong hand. I love that. Wrong hand. So good.
I quite like General Irie Moore or whatever, who's played by Colin Firth, where just as they go, they're like, "Just is it just the two of us you're sending?" And he quotes like Kipling. He says, "Down to Gehenna or up to the throne, he who travels fastest is he who travels alone."
Oh, yeah.
And it's like,
that was great.
Wow. And then I really like when they come to, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch, who is, you know, the crazy commander who's just wanting to attack, who he's got to convince. And it takes a while. You know, he's just like, you know, we got him on the run. You know, what are you talking about? You know, and he gets him to read it. And then he has this heartfelt speech where he's like, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, he's like, I thought this was going to be a good day, but you know, it doesn't matter. Next week, they're going to tell us to attack. You know, this changes nothing. So he gives this big speech and then he goes, so do you need somebody to tend to your wound, to your wounds? And he's like, huh? He's like, fuck off, private, you know. He just tells him to fuck off.
Like, yeah.
Now fuck off, Lance Corporal.
Yeah, that was it.
But I do love the balance. Like, again, you get another sweet moment, though, where Cumberbatch is second in command. Finally, somebody fucking says it. They pull him aside and he goes, well done, lad. And lets him go. It's such a good moment.
One thing that I kind of don't like, but I suppose it's, I think it is related to just like how, you know, nonstop the film is, and probably because of the camera and stuff. But there are two things that I thought were a bit weird, and they're just conveniences because, like, they have to happen, but it feels like they happen right away, where I would have wanted some time. Or maybe just cut to there has been time that passed. So one from the death of his friend to he has a ride. And then the other one I think was him finding his friend's brother, which I love the scene, but that was quick. He found him really quickly. Like, he was just up there. You know, he didn't have to like search for him or anything. Like, you know, he was just literally across the thing. So those are my like two gripes story-wise. It's like those two things happened really quickly from each other.
I didn't really have a problem with either of those moments. To be honest, I think certainly in that last one where he meets Richard Madden, his brother, like, I think I'm just too emotionally invested into the story. I didn't notice that it was kind of really convenient.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really have many gripes about this story at all. I think it's pretty awesome, very affecting.
No. And I don't either, but I am just going to mention those two because I had a gripe with it. But other than that, I loved the rest of the story. I thought it was perfect, but yeah.
Matt, what is your screenplay score for 1917?
I really like the script for this. I like it more than the visuals, I think. So I'm going to give this one a good bump and go 9. Going a flat 9 on the script here.
Interesting. Boaz, what should we go for?
I was thinking a 9.2.
That was what I was thinking. See, we're
psychic
today in this particular score. It must be so daunting going into this from page one. Like, yeah, this is going to be real time. You're like, sorry, what? You're crazy. What? You're leaving us no room for maneuver. We got to get every scene like spot on. And they do. Yeah. They really do. I think there's no moments where it's baggy. Yeah. And I think the tension is held throughout. The variations of pace are extraordinarily good.
I was just going to say, like, a part in the script that I don't think I mentioned, I may have mentioned, I can't remember, but after, you know, he's been down the river and, you know, he's kind of, it looks like he's given up. And then I like how he goes to the, you know, the choir scene, and I love that scene, and then sits down and they're like, the other guys are talking, like, who the hell is this guy? Is he with us? You know, it's like, he's wet.
He's all wet.
Yeah. Should we take him with us?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, he's just worn down and he's like, where are you looking for? And he says the company he's looking for. He's like, that's us. And he's just like, what? You know, and he's like, yeah, we can get you to the commander. He's, you know, and he just immediately perks up and it's like a second wind. I really like that.
I also kind of like it through the storytelling through like his costume and props because he loses his helmet, his rifle and the map, obviously his friends throughout the whole thing, you know, so he's losing resources throughout, you know.
He's given away his canteen to the babe. He's gotten rid of all of his food. Yeah, he is stripped down to the bone by the time he gets to. Mm. And that's when he's like the bravest in the most danger. Like he's got nothing, yet he's going over the top before any of them and just running past like shells and stuff.
Yeah, with nothing. With
absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So that makes that scene even more special.
So acting then, I like the acting from George Mackay when his character is asleep right at the start and the sergeant asks Blake to pick a man and to bring his kit. And George opens his eyes when the sergeant approaches, but pretends he's asleep again when he says, pick a man. He's like, please don't pick me, but just accepts it and goes on this journey with Blake. So I just really like that real subtle acting moment from George, where he is awake, but then when he comes, he's like, nope, I'm going to pretend to be asleep. Please don't pick me.
And I love that theme too, because that is paid off again after the tunnel collapse when he breaks down and he's like, why did you pick, like, why me? Mm. Right? I'm already having, every day for me is a shitty day at work. Why would you pick me for this awful project? Why do I have to do this with you? I love the way he does that because he has that moment of vulnerability.
And little details in George Mackay's acting I just really appreciate as well, and just made the feeling of this film even more realistic to me, was when he's under sniper fire crossing the canal and he has to like compose himself and take a few deep breaths before aiming his rifle at the guy in the window. And you get so much character from that. Mm. This guy is incredibly scared and weary already and just needs a moment to concentrate. Yeah. And I love that. And you just don't see that enough in action films where they're just like, I need to take a moment here.
Absolutely.
To compose my shot and aim my rifle properly.
And he's even looking round and then, you know, he's unsure when the next bullet's going
to
happen.
The attention to detail in the acting is really amazing.
He's not an action hero and it's just great how it's acted. Like, he's shit scared like anybody else would be.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's not a James Bond, for example. Like, this guy could die. Mm. That does come across in the performance.
I did love what you guys pointed out earlier. You're absolutely right. Like, you don't think about it because you're just watching, you know, characters in this movie, but they're just kids. Yeah. These are just kids. It's crazy that they were saddled with having to do this. And the casting is perfect for that because they are arguably the two youngest looking people, I think, that we see in the movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They look like two teenagers. They would be more at home in Superbad or something than this. So to see them take all this on their shoulders is crazy.
And I just like that moment on the truck as well from George Mackay when he's just lost his friend Blake and all these other guys are just, you know, chatting and making jokes and stuff. And he's processing of just what has happened and not even acknowledging that they're there almost, you know. It's such an internal performance in that moment.
And they're just talking shit too, like kids, right? They're just having this like random conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. They're laughing and joking and doing impressions. And
oh, that's what they're doing. They're imitating a commanding officer that they all imitate.
Yeah.
Like college kids. They're making fun of a professor that everybody quotes.
But yeah, I do like that. So like the camera's going on them and they're just laughing and then sticking on him and just blank faced. It's like, do you know, I'm not here right now, you know?
And those kids don't really acknowledge that he's there as well. And then when he gets the guys to push the truck, then they all kind of realize he is a dude in the truck, you know? He is an actual person and not invisible.
He kind of changes demeanor really quickly because, one, he's just blank, he's not there. Yeah. And then the truck stops, he gets out, and then he's ordering them. Like, he's somehow, you know, he's like, get out, everybody get out, push, push.
Yeah. But even before he's pleading, he tries to take it on himself. That's how much he wants to finish. He's trying to push the truck on his own. It's a great moment.
And then he's like, please, you know, like begging them. But, you know, it's it's really genuine. So, you know, those are three like really different emotions, like back to back. So that's pretty good.
I love the little performance from Benedict Cumberbatch when Schofield bursts into the room, where he looks very serious and you're really not sure whether the letter will get into his hands or not. And when it does, Cumberbatch's face turns so subtly that you know before he says anything that, yeah, he will stop the attack. So I just love Benedict Cumberbatch, man. He is my man crush, I guess, in acting. The guy is extraordinary.
Oh, he's great.
And it's hardly anything as well, you know?
And any little tick he can make interesting, even the way he removes his helmet for that moment, there's something like so just, it's big, it's great. I too am a big Cumber, I'm a Cumber bitch, as they say.
Yes. Yes.
His army of Cumber bitches.
He makes me come a bunch.
Oh, God. Lower the tone. Jesus Christ.
Boaz, I give that joke a 10. A flat 10. It's the top joke I've heard.
Oh, God. I'm here all week.
He certainly doesn't need a wanking hand, for sure. And people stop listening. So any other acting moments anyone likes?
I just want to again praise Andrew Scott. That guy manages to be so big in his 2 minutes of screen time, and he also is just feels so lived into that world and so real. He makes it look effortless. The best actors always do. And I also want to give a shout to the French girl. I love that. You know, it's hard to do that with, she's doing it in another language, then sometimes speaking broken English, but all of her emotions feel real. You're able to glean a lot. You know what she's saying, even when you don't know what she's saying. And I think that's very difficult. So definitely want to give her a shout because I think she did great.
Favorite performance? Who are we going with?
I just quite liked him, but Blake, and I think especially like his death scene, like that was just, that was rough.
Dean Charles Chapman.
Yes, Thomason, right? Wasn't that his name? Thomason on Game of Thrones. Or Tommins. Tommins.
Yeah, he looks so different in Game of Thrones.
Yes. Young Tommins, yeah.
Was he? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Was he really?
I agree with that. He's the performance of the movie. That kid says so much and does so much and is so heroic. And he really sells the tragedy of his loss big time.
Yeah, I'm going to go with George Mackay. I just think he's just... His journey that he goes through for his acting is pretty extraordinary for me, how he grows as a character. Yeah, so I'm going for George. So acting score, Matt?
Being real generous on this one. Everybody did such a tremendous job. So I'm going to go 9.2. 9.2, I think.
That's a good score. Nice. Boaz, what should we go for?
Do you want to go straight 9?
I think, you know, the two leads are just really incredible, especially George for me, as I've said. And obviously, there's a lot of characters that just come and go. They're there to service the story. They're not, like, trying to, like, do too much at all. Yeah. It's like, oh, this is my scene. I must act my ass off. No, you know, everything is in tone to the rest of the film and in their character. So, flat 9, I think. Right, let's add up the scores then for 1917. Nearly went into song again. I do like that moment. But
what song were you going to sing?
Well, no, just sing the scores, you know. Oh,
okay. While you're checking the scores, I hope you will indulge me, and I will tell you a true story really quick of the first time I saw 1917. It's become a running joke on our show, but it is not just a bit for comedy. This comedy was first based in truth. I saw this. I don't know if you guys go to movie theaters like this, but here in America, we have a lot of dine-in theaters, like movies where you sit down and they bring you a full dinner. It's not ideal, but, you know, sometimes that's the theater that's playing the movie. I really wanted to see 1917, and I saw it in 70mm at the Alamo Drafthouse here in San Francisco. Wonderful projection. I wanted to see it as big as possible. It's a dine-in theater, and I was hungry. And the joke on our show is that while these young men were giving their lives and dying and their guts are hanging out, I'm sitting there eating a flatbread pizza like a fat guy watching them sacrifice their lives. So it was great.
I intentionally was like, I will not eat during this screening of 1917. So when I sat down to watch it this time, I was a good boy and I struggled. I put all the snacks away. I didn't even have a drink of water. Yeah, I just watched the film and then afterwards ate like a bad man. So I would not repeat the sins of the past. So there you go. That's my story.
That's nice.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a a stickler for eating, and I don't eat in cinemas. I'm like, I just have a drink, that's it. I'm not eating. I'm just gonna watch the movie. That's it.
I eat everything just before the movie starts, so you know, just scoff it all down.
Scoff in your face.
See, you boys are clever. I'm half and half, because sometimes I will just forget, and when I get there I wanna eat. And I'm like, well, I'm not gonna not eat. It's like, what are you watching? 1917, as I shovel a pepperoni into my face.
So 1917 gets 53 points. So Skyfall wins with 54.6. So it's a very, very narrow victory.
That's very narrow.
Wow.
53-54.
Tight match.
Could be controversial. I don't know, for some people.
Come at me, bro.
Personally, I'm happy with that result, I think.
Yeah. I think it's warranted.
Two very, very good films. Next episode, as Avatar The Way of Water is out, we are talking James Cameron films, and we will have a guest on for that one as well, Lee from the Lights, Camera, Rant podcast. So that'll be very exciting as well. Matt from the Matt and Mark Movie Show, you've been amazing. We've loved having you on. Such a great guest. So good.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Yeah. I'm sorry this took so long. Like, this feels like it's been 6 months in the making. So I'm just excited to be here. And you were both incredible hosts. And the movies couldn't have been better. I mean, at first I was afraid when it was like, let's do a Sam Mendes episode. I was like, he's not someone I think of right away. And I'm so glad we went this direction, because we got two stellar movies out of this.
Yeah.
This is your opportunity again to tell us about your podcast.
Oh, yes. We are the Matt and Mark Movie Show. We are available on all the major streaming platforms. Definitely come check us out, especially if you are into horror films, genre. We don't just do horror if you're scared of that. We do a lot of genre stuff. We also navel gaze a lot and talk about the movies that we love from the 80s and 90s that we can't stop talking about. Find us on Instagram at the Matt and Mark Movie Show. We're on Twitter, but Twitter's a dumpster fire now, and we never really use Twitter. So don't bother with us there. Just go to Instagram. We're most active there. We would love to have you. And we would love to also have Martin and Boaz come stop by the Matt Mark Movie Show, if you boys...
Yes, most definitely.
Oh, absolutely.
...care to do so. We'll set something up for the future. We got to have you guys on.
Yes, definitely check out their Instagram. You know, you have a lot of amazing physical media posts, so they are very cool.
Oh, yeah, thank you, yeah.
Right, it's goodbye from Matt. Bye-bye, sir.
Goodbye.
Yes, and it's goodbye from our secret agent with crazy hair. Bye-bye, Mr. Encyclopedia Man, Boaz Dix.
Auf Wiedersehen.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to get some food because I'm really hungry now. Bye-bye. That's it for part two. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Check out part one if you haven't done so already. But don't stop there. Get involved and tell us what your favourite films are relating to the episodes. Send us a DM or comment on Instagram and TikTok at Film vs. Film Podcast, for Twitter at FVF_podcast. If you do, we'll give you a shout out on the next episode. If you're feeling really generous, you can buy us a one-off coffee at our Buy Me a Coffee account. Remember, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe. Pod signing off. Thank you.